Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, testing.
Can't remember. Nobody saw anything.
Okay.
I'm not any question.
I got it.
They ain't question. Nobody saw anything.
1, 2, 1, 2.
Then it's illegal to have the other case still open. One of its closures from closure.
You're going to get to talk when I'm done. Huh. Is that what it'll be?
No, it's something we discuss.
Sorry, Mr.
That's not a problem.
My fault for not recognizing that sooner.
Not a problem at all. So, during the 2009, nobody disputes that incident happened. Mr. Marvin was tased and, you know, beat up, and that the person that caused them to respond wasn't concerned with him being prosecuted or anything, and that the officers went to his house and surrounded it. There, and it's not a question of whether, you know, Mr. Marvin, as the state argues, attacked the officers then, or whether they, sort of manhandled him, as it kind of sounds on the audio and looks from the photographs. The question is, that nobody disputes, is that incident had some impact on what happened later. It mattered. Everybody agrees with that. Everybody agrees that, I think, there's no dispute that Mr. Marvin was deteriorating mentally, and that people thought he needed help. And that nobody gave him any help. The former police chief, prior to Chief Millen, acknowledged as much, very openly, that he needed mental health help.
Yeah.
And nobody helped him.
All he checked on was vitamins.
I went to see Mr. Marvin yesterday to go through the academic process of saying, you know, you're going to get a chance to talk. Are you going to talk? Is there anything you want me to say for you?
Yeah,
we're still doing the ballistics testing. After this is over, you're going to be sentenced, and we're going to file a notice of appeal, and you're going to get a different lawyer. And, eventually down the road, if somebody thinks I made mistakes, then you have a post-conviction relief. No, we didn't talk about any of that. We talked about birth certificates. You know?
Which you never got.
So I understand, as a human, we all understand the pain that these people have gone through that is not going to end tomorrow. It's not going to end next year. It's not going to end 20 years from now. It just is. And I know that it's logical to have Mr. Marvin be the source of all that is that pain. But I'm just suggesting that clear that it's more complicated than that, and that Mr. Marvin failed, but other people, maybe could have done things differently, and maybe those officers would be alive. If we analyze this from a, kind of a civil context where we talk about all the possible, contributing factors, all the causes and facts of a result.
Pre-sentence, you just talked about it earlier.
Then it's not just Mr. Marvin executed these officers. Mr. Brower made a comparison to the current case. That guy went to the guy's door, allegedly, and shot him. Nobody ever argued that Mr. Marvin stalked these officers and went to their door. The state looked for evidence that he had specifically threatened them or had problems with the police, but I think pretty much the opposite was established at trial, and that's reflected in some of the synopsises of trooper interviews that are included in the pre-sentence report. It's logical to say, well, a person who committed these acts has no redeeming qualities, they're the manifestation of evil, not worthwhile in any fashion. But that's not what people said either. To recognize that somebody has a mental health problem is not to justify their actions. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. Somebody can have mental health problems and also be on some level responsible for their actions. That's what the whole competency, culpability stuff that we talked about pretrial dealt with. And we disagreed on those things.
Rule 45.
And those things
speedy trial.
Those Those things are in the record, and those things will be litigated. They're not before the court today.
I never got disclosure.
But this kind of stuff right now, this right now, is I mean, people
competent,
can capable. Say whatever they want. People can say this guy had this concocted this premeditated plan. But I just suggest it isn't borne out by the way he presents, by any interaction I've ever had with him. It's the best trick I've ever seen. I mean, he has Andy Kaufman covered. I had mentioned, I think, pretrial in a pleading that, you know, I talked to the jail guards because he's in isolation there. Did you ever let on? Any indication that this is, you know, malingering?
We discussed it's illegal.
No, it's the best.
It's illegal to keep
it's me. No job ever because separate. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A couple academic things regarding the sentences. The court, of course, ruled that, well, denied my motion to reconsider the finding that Officer Wallace was engaged in official proceedings, and there's a record on that. And as the state points out, and everybody knew from the get-go, there's a 99-year sentence that's required. But to that's written into the statute. In other words, the legislature has said killing a police officer is a worst offense. Because a 99-year sentence is the longest sentence that can be imposed. I mean, it's tautological. By definition, it must be a worst offense. But then to then use that fact that an officer was killed as to say this, he's Mr. Marvin is the worst offender, is, I would suggest, bootstrapping. Because, I mean, that fact has already been used to establish the sentencing range. Or you just say every time somebody kills a police officer, that's a worst offense. I mean, then you wouldn't need to engage in any further inquiry. But beyond that, for all the reasons I mentioned, there are a lot more cold-blooded murders. The state says, well, he knew they were police officers. Well, that's relevant for us, too. He knew them. That's relevant for us as well. I mean, what are the prosecutors in Sandy Hook going to say? They're going to say that's a worst offense, right? I mean, if that was a trial. What are the prosecutors in Colorado going to say about the movie shoot? They're going to say that. I mean, that was a worst offense, right? But those things are, if we're going to talk about other cases, those things are categorically different than this case because of the prior contacts, because of the paranoia that built, because Mr. Marvin had put himself under siege, and because he'd come to believe that he was under attack from these officers, who then showed up then to do what? Confirming his belief, shining the light in the window. So it's not inconsistent to, on the one hand, say, you can't go around killing people and destroying families. And also acknowledge that maybe on some level everybody feels a tinge of this didn't have to happen. With regard to Matthew Tokuoka, the jury did not find that he was engaged in official duties as an officer. And I'm not quite sure, but I understand Mr. Brower to be arguing that the court should set that aside and still find by some other standard that he was. I mean, that seems to be the state's argument. Maybe like a person's acquitted, but you've on a probation violation, the court still finds that they committed the violation or something. I don't know what the law is on that, but the court does have the jury's finding that he was not. So the sentence range there is 20 to 99. The same argument applies regarding whether it's a worst offense. I would suggest this is not, and you know, every life has value. I believe that. It's tragic when people are police officers and die, but it's tragic when people are homeless and die too. You know, it's not. I worry that we don't. I think it does disservice to those people, to Mr. Wallace and Mr. Tokuoka, if we say that their lives are more important than anybody else's, because I doubt they would say that. I mean, I would bet that they would not say that. Every life is valuable. Mr. Brower says that the court should restrict parole eligibility in the for the murder conviction with regard to Officer Tokuoka, and that just strikes me as being piling on. And like I said, I'm saying this in light of this being academic for the most part, but it smacks of piling on. And there were several comments that I understand that are vengeful from the things that came in the supplemental pre-sentence materials in forms of letters and things people said. And I think we all understand that too, how we would feel standing in those people's shoes, not being able to feel that, but recognizing how I would feel if somebody hurt somebody I cared about. And so I understand that, but that's not, really a sentencing criteria. Revenge is not one of the things that the court considers when imposing sentence. I think it would be fair to characterize the overall gist of the state sentencing memorandum is that the court should focus solely on isolation in a technical sense. There's community condemnation and those things. I mean, I don't know where cultures may differ, but I don't think murder is legal in very many countries. I mean, our law evolves, from a basic morality, and I'm not up here arguing that murder isn't among crimes that causes somebody to think maybe this person needs to be isolated so they don't shoot people. But that's what the sentencing ranges already recognize. Those are built into them, the 99 years and the 20 to 99 definitionally account for sentences that are largely, if not totally, focused on isolation. I wish I wonder if people think that I think people sometimes think that defense lawyers have secrets, that we know things from, we glean things. Maybe we do sometimes from, our clients. But for the most part, I would say that what you see, what you all have seen, is what you get with Mr. Marvin, and I don't have any special insights. The late Dr. Wise said that Mr. Marvin is delusional and ain't going to get fixed. He didn't think. And Dr. Spurbeck initially said that Mr. Marvin was delusional, but that he can be fixed. And then Mr. Marvin didn't take any medication, and then Mr. Marvin was fixed. I don't know. I don't know that he cares, Your Honor. I don't know that he knows. I don't say you're good. Should we go to jail for the rest of your life? I don't know what that means to him. I have no insight on that at all. I do know that he is different than any person I've ever met, and that it, I think I could sit with him forever and never understand. The one hopes that we don't have too many of these cases in our lives. I do, anyway, for myself, for selfish reasons. There was never any winning from the beginning, you know. I don't think anybody could honestly say we didn't know where we'd end up here, probably, from the day Mr. Marvin was arrested. You know, there weren't going to be offers, and we were going to go trial, and this was probably going to be the verdict. So there aren't a lot of surprises, but there are still a lot of questions. In none of my comments have I ever meant to be disrespectful to anybody who has suffered as a result of these crimes. As I said, I appreciate that people have been largely respectful to not just me, but to Mr. Marvin as well. I mean, under the circumstances, as best they could. I'll just finish by saying I think that, to dovetail to what I said before, maybe something can be learned here. You know, there's all this stuff in the media about guns and background checks and all these things, and maybe somebody can learn something. Maybe somebody in the future somewhere will go, you know, maybe we ought to take a look at the way that person's behaving and if that person has guns. You know, maybe somebody will not die as a result. Maybe something will come from it. Ultimately, I just want to say that nothing I've said today should be construed as anything other than in context of the jury verdicts or to in any way undermine any appellate argument, the point of appeal that Mr. Marvin might have. And with that, I just ask the court to address Mr. Marvin about whether he wants to make any comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
One moment, Judge.
Yes.
I did want to, one thing I did forget.
I'm next.
I'm
supposed to be next.
You're going to be next.
I object.
Just a moment, Mr. Marvin.
Could
you do it at the end?
Sure.
Okay.
Mr. Marvin, you have the right to address the court. Is there anything you'd like to say?
It's going to be real brief and right to the point.
You may proceed.
Now, in this proceedings, things have been out of order. Like that thumbprinting, that was here at the vast beginning of these proceedings. And I'm bringing up different things about this, that a lot of this different proceedings were done out of order. And Eric and I had very much difficulty with Rule 45 that these proceedings were being done out of order. It was done abruptly and done quickly where we weren't getting disclosure. In these proceedings, we did not get disclosure ever. That's been on record continuously. In this proceedings, in order to continue through this situation, an incident, you have to understand incident is small. So something small happened on the night of question. Something small happened on a day. And what I was talking about is in this other incident, he mentioned himself, this is an incident, and these two officers trespassed my property. And I confronted them through the window. And I said, look, I'm proper on my property. You're trespassing on my property. And then there, they got lost with that incident. And I said, look, this is not as you think. It's literally daytime, and you're aiming flashlights in my home. You're not right. So they're lost, so they were doing odd things, so I didn't think of them. So I kept it really simple with them. And then later, this is misconstrued. And later on, we're trying to close this other case so we can proceed to this one. We're trying to proceed to this case. It is illegal to proceed with a case open into this case. And so, therefore, it's double jeopardy.
And then he understood it that it's double jeopardy, and so we need to close this case so we can proceed. And that's why that case is mentioned more often than usual, because it still was thought to be open. So work diligently to get disclosure so we can close the case. In this, there was much confusion about it, and we didn't know why, because there were so many witnesses to that first incident that's small. Now, in this part, in the day and the evening, it's still small. I was at work, and on the clock, many witnesses had seen the officers kick my home. They went and kicked my home and fell down and struck their head. And then they got injured, and then it was on record. And I said, look, it's on record. These officers injured themselves striving to enter my home illegally. It's not right. Then the other night in question was full moon. Everybody could see these two officers here. They wanted me to pass between them. I said, look, you're lost. I won't do that. You don't understand that this is not as you think. You can both hurt yourself. Now, I was told they shot at each other. I said, look, don't do that. Halt. And they wouldn't listen to me. So I proceeded carefully, and there's many misinterpretations of this evening where we're still small on the first part of that case. And to my knowledge, it's still small. It's an incident. Now, in this other part, it's still small. We got a small injury on their head. And so me, I kept it really simple. In this proceeding, it's pretty obvious what was happening. A whole lot of misinterpretations, a whole lot of illegal activities, and people trespassing on a high-ranked royal's property. He's proper on his property. I'm a high-ranked royal. I work hard in my life, and this took too long. I said, this is taking too long. Now, they wanted to proceed to a DUI. I said, that's impossible. We're not even done with this case, and now they want to go to a DUI? And Eric told him, look, he's captive. I cannot be found guilty of a DUI. So now we're talking about three different cases. And I told you, this three cases, it's impossible to proceed. So the DA mentioned that there is a DUI, and it'll make sense. So in this proceeding, you'll realize that this isn't going right. And I'll keep it brief. Now, in Rule 45, you have different legal procedures, and it talks about it clearly. And so here, Eric didn't want nothing to do with it. And so he said, well, we'll send you up to Anchorage for long recovery. And that's where all that started. So I went up to Anchorage for long recovery, and then there, later on, it was construed. And then there, they kept sending us legal work. I said, look. These three cases are not to be here. And Dr. Malode admitted, yeah, they want it on August 10th. And so I told Malode, just be careful. Just keep it simple that they want it on August 10th. And it wouldn't fit. And I was told that they want this whole proceedings in July. And there is a reason. And I'll get to it briefly. In this, the entire total proceedings was taking too long, and we didn't get disclosure. And then August went too long, and then here, up here, I'm doing recovery. And Malode was talking to me about this. I said, look, I'm not to see these. I'm not to handle them because it's already been signed and dated. It's already been, it's out of due process, and so it's violation of Rule 45. So she talked to me about this, and that's on record. Now, in this, like I was telling Eric, look, there's no DUI. There's no other history left in this. And I'll talk about 91 to keep it brief. In 91, it wasn't as they thought. 92 isn't as they thought. 93 isn't as they thought because of due process. Now, all my record is going to be expunged, is going to be spotlessly clean. Everybody will know, look, he's a high-ranked royal. He's innocent. We understand 90. We understand 91, 92, 93. He's innocent. Many witnesses saw this.
Mr. Marvin?
No.
I'm up here, Mr. Marvin. Address your comments to me, okay? Speak to me, not your attorney.
Anyways, in this proceedings, people not realizing that I remember the 1H1051CR being up in Anchorage. It is illegal to have this up in Anchorage because it was already signed and dated. It was already pretty much closed. That's why I said it's not going to work for you. So in here, when I brought up the 50-50, or well, anyways, it's known as the S50. I said, look, the S50 isn't, do you think? In this legal proceedings, there's so much legal cases and so many cases open, it's illegal to proceed this way. So up in Anchorage, I saw a fair amount of this legal work, and I said, this is illegal to do it this way, where you have too many open cases. So now, when we proceed legally in this proceedings, it will be out of order. And then this case will be dropped. How can you drop a case? It's better to close it. It's better to finalize it and have it proceed in an orderly manner. And then we'll go into the pre-sentence and go into civil. And that's where we were talking about. We'll go into the civil. Now, the civil is a part of this, and it's here. In the civil part, in this proceedings, it's not the same. I'm not to see these cases, and I saw literally all of them up in Anchorage, all out of order. I said, this is not right. I'm innocent, high rank royal. And I kept it real simple. I'm innocent. And now, when it comes to my history, I said, in the legal history, it's spotless because in here, the proceedings is literally expunging my history. And so in this, it's going to be out of order. And then when a lawyer, like he's saying in the past, or here further in the future, will look at it and say, how could this be? He's a high-ranked royal. He's innocent. And him, you'll understand now, it's a mess. It's a legal mess. He saw all this before he was found guilty, but he's innocent. It's a double jeopardy. They'll admit it. In here, you were saying that you have to find him guilty on all counts, and he didn't. They found me innocent on one, and then he stopped. Then you sent him back in. They found me innocent, and then the others didn't want to proceed on. So there, it's a hung jury. And there I'm found double jeopardy, which is absurd. And now here we are with this proceeding. And I said, look, we have too many open cases. We have different case numbers that are open in an odd way, and now we're going to be closing them. Not right, and it's illegal to proceed this way. Now, this all began in a just a way that's really obvious to people. They can come in and see us. We know Mr. Marvin. He lives in Huna. He does these different royal duties. He's high rank royal. And he's thought to be born from Sitka. For some reason, I thought I was from Sitka. I said, no, I'm from Mount Etch, coming in a way that you wouldn't understand. My high rank. People understand that royals endeavor from different cultures and different, they would say, birthrights. Royals are not understood in Alaska, not at all. And so in here, I had to be very careful and I had to wait patiently for disclosure, which we never got. Now, Eric and I maintain the insurance and maintain the bonding, the bail, and I was able to leave here. I was let go out of prison 40 times, then 8 times Eric committed, let me out. If I'm so dangerous, why would I come back? This doesn't make sense. People look at it and say, why is this being treated? Why is this going this way? People don't understand this, but they know me. They know that I'm innocent. They saw it right there on literally on Front Street. Like I said, it's really public. It's full moon. It's right there. Everybody saw it. Even Lisa Wolf saw it. She saw it. Look, he's innocent. She admitted he's innocent. It said right there, right on the paper. Didn't like to admit it. So I'll wrap this up. In this, when I saw the civil, it was even before the trial. I said, look, this isn't right. I'm not to be seeing these here. Bad enough I saw them up in Anchorage before any of this legal proceedings happened. I'm doing long recovery up there. And then there they admit, yeah, you're doing long recovery. Then later on in this, like I told them, it's going to have different dates on here. And so they don't know what date that is. Because there they didn't know what the actual date and time and everything. And so in this proceedings, it can be out of order. And so in here, what I shared with everybody that's, you know, decent and law-abiding, this is covered under insurance. HUNA is heavily covered under insurance. Juno is as well, heavily covered under insurance. Now, we could proceed judicially, and then we could proceed civil. And what I recommended with Eric is we cover this with insurance. And then I did a royal insist, and I said, I'm to get this insurance policy and get this insurance proceedings in a way where we can show the court, look, it's covered by insurance. Then here, in the pre-sentence report, this will go much smoother. And so Eric said, all right, I'll look into it. I never got anything, Eric. And there, on birth certificates, the reason why I keep bringing up, as royals, when you have records and birth certificates, you do better. That's all. It just says here on insurance, you do better. That's all, Eric. It's not that difficult. And so anyways, in this proceedings, I've been very patient, very kind. I listen to everybody. I do empathize. I really understood what happened in the evening, in the day. And then this, as sad as it went, far too long. That's all. For the most part of it. I do empathize. I do understand. I am innocent. It is very misunderstood what's going on with this. And like I shared with Eric, I said, there's many witnesses. Not, in HUNA as well as Juno. In Juno, the last witnesses were by the hospital. Because they're a witness. And then I talked to the bailiff. The bailiff talked to the other parties involved to get a newer royal vehicle to protect themselves. And I told you, I said, there's different parts of the proceedings that we have to get. It would be covered under the insurance. I know it will. And that's what I wanted.
Mr. Mervin, I'm up.
So there it is.
I'm up here.
All right. I'm done.
Thank you, sir. Well, this has been a long case. It's gone on for a long time. At times, Mr. Marvin's been unable to be with us because he was receiving assistance, and that delayed the proceedings. But finally, we received the okay, and I was convinced, based upon the evidence, Mr. Marvin was prepared and able to go forward. There are a number of guiding principles or basic rules. Mr. Brower and Mr. Hedlund have referred to those because of the special finding of the jury with regard to Officer Wallace's murder. The mandatory sentence in that case is 99 years. The legislature has further declared that as to that particular offense, there is no eligibility for discretionary parole and no eligibility for good time mandatory parole. In Officer Tokuoka's case, the jury did not make that same special finding. The range of sentence in that case is 20 to 99 years. The court has the discretion to make some of the sentences concurrent, is limited in concurrency, must make at least the mandatory minimum sentences consecutive. The state has asked that the court declare Mr. Marvin a worst offender, and I think implicitly has asked that I determine that this is a worst offense. Worst offender classification is based upon, can be based upon the facts of the case, this particular case alone, or it can be based upon a defendant's criminal history, or it can be based upon a combination of those two things. The court must find a defendant to be a worst offender to impose a maximum sentence. That's not an issue in the sentence related to Officer Wallace, because I'm required to impose 99 years. That is an issue which the court needs to resolve in addressing the state's urging that I impose the maximum 99-year sentence in that case. The state has also asked that I restrict on Officer Tokuoka's case, Mr. Marvin's eligibility for parole. The Supreme Court has said certainly that discretion exists. It's been provided to me by the legislature. That's 1255-115, I think. But it has also said, meaning the Supreme Court has said, that there is a presumption that in lengthy sentences the court should not restrict discretionary parole, because quite logically, court often doesn't know what's going to happen 20 or 30 years down the road, or whatever a substantial length of time is, and that's best left to a parole board whose job it is to resolve those types of issues. In handing it down a sentence, there are general principles that I must consider, and these apply probably to what the composite sentence is and to what the sentence will be for the murder of Officer Tokuoka, because as I mentioned before, the legislature has pretty much mandated the sentence for the murder of Officer Wallace. I have to consider the seriousness of the offense, the circumstances of the offense, the harms to the victim, the degree to which the public was endangered. I have to consider the need to isolate the defendant. The sentence has to reflect appropriate community condemnation and reaffirm societal norms. I have to consider the effect of the sentence on deterring others, deterring the defendant. I have to consider the restoration effect of the sentence on the victims and the community, and I have to consider whether the defendant's rehabilitation potential is served by the sentence. Let me back up here first to the seriousness of the offense. This is a most serious offense. There are few offenses I can imagine that are, murder is of the most serious class of offenses. In this particular case, it is true that Mr. Marvin may have been operating under a misapprehension that he was wrongfully treated in the past by the officers in question, specifically Officers Tokuoka and Officer Wallace. But I find that the manner in which this offense was committed, that the offense was committed deliberately, it was motivated by a perception of need to exact revenge. It was executed without any immediately preceding, precipitating event. This was not in anger. The actions of the defendant were deliberate. He went to his high hide in the second floor of his house and fired out of that window down on the street below, and those who had come together there. It was purposeful. Only the two officers who had their previous interaction with Mr. Marvin were shot. No other individuals were shot at, as best anyone can tell. And the shots that were visited upon the officers were those necessary to bring the officers down in the kill zone that was perceivable from that high hide. I'll find that further that the events here, the nature of the conduct here, was persistent. First, Officer Wallace was shot. Mr. Marvin had the chance to withdraw, to surrender, but rather he continued on and picked out a new target and fired two bullets into the chest of Officer Tokuoka. I find the circumstances of the offense are also most serious. They were done in certainly a small town, but then done right in downtown, where there were other people present. Indeed, there were two children just a few feet away from Officer Wallace. Those were the Tokuoka children sitting in the back seat of their vehicle. Ms. Debbie Green, Officer Wallace's mother, was in the vehicle that was where behind which Officer Tokuoka and Officer Wallace were seeking cover when the second two series of shots rang out. But for the ability of Mr. Marvin to bring down the targets he chose to hit, the entire community that was downtown was potentially in danger. I also find that the conduct of shooting Officer Tokuoka was additionally aggravated by the fact that this officer was coming to the aid of the first officer who was down. And apart from taking down Officer Tokuoka, it also denied Officer Wallace the immediate assistance of the officer who was coming to aid him. I'll find that Mr. Marvin knew both of these officers. He knew they were police officers. It is true that the jury found that Officer Tokuoka was not in uniform or performing his services. The defense would have me say that he was not discharging official duties at the time. The special finding was actually that the officer was in uniform or otherwise clearly identified as an officer and discharging official duties at the time. And we don't know what the jury decided, but it's this court's opinion that the evidence established that Officer Tokuoka was rendering aid, making calls for assistance as Mr. Brower had indicated. And I find it's most likely, at least it pressed me, that Officer Tokuoka was doing what he was supposed to do as an officer. The jury could easily have found that he was, in fact, discharging those duties, but was not uniformed or clearly identified as an officer at the time that he engaged in that activity. I don't think the jury's finding precludes the court from considering that circumstance of these events. And then, of course, after the officers were taken away, there was a two-day standoff, which could have gone wrong at any moment, required a lot of police assistance, barricaded off the downtown Hoonah area, a most difficult and dangerous assistance, which, thank goodness for the efforts the police used, tear gas and the like, resulted in Mr. Marvin's peaceful surrender. I have to consider the need to isolate Mr. Marvin, and I think that's clear. His criminal history includes 12 prior convictions. There are 3 assaults and 1 sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree. These are substantial and serious offenses. I do find, based upon a combination, essentially the killing of these officers, certainly Officer Tokuoka, was premeditated, and it was for revenge, as I indicated before. Case law would indicate that premeditated murder justifies a finding of worst offender standing alone. That's Whites v. State, 794 P. 2nd, 952. I think when you add on top of that, the offenses are committed by a defendant who has a Class A prior felony, as well as 3 other assaults, that a worst offender finding can be made, and I make that finding in this case. I have to consider the community condemnation. Clearly, the legislature has declared first-degree murder a serious offense and has, by virtue of the imposition of the mandatory 99 years without discretionary parole, a good time on Officer Wallace has given it the highest community condemnation. It is true that the mandatory penalty does not apply to the murder of Officer Tokuoka, but it is clear to me that Mr. Marvin knew both officers, knew both of them were police officers. As I mentioned earlier, that his actions were most likely taken in revenge. And so while the officer was not in uniform, the fact that it was an officer unknown to Mr. Marvin, I think, is a substantial fact in fashioning a sentence here. An analogy might be made to a person who's supposed to be served with a subpoena to come to court. The subpoena service may be imprecise, but the person finds out from a neighbor and comes to court anyway. You can say that person wasn't served, but they certainly were in court. Now, I think that while certainly the mandatory penalties of denying good time and denying parole, discretionary parole, do not apply automatically because of the conviction that Mr. Marvin has for Officer Tokuoka, I don't think I can ignore those facts, and I think they need to be considered in determining an appropriate sentence. In the case, the need to reaffirm societal norms, I think, is appropriate. Police are a core institution of our society. Indeed, this type of murder is a direct assault upon the heart of public safety by intentionally taking out those individuals who provide public safety on a day-to-day basis. And as I said before, I think it's also to be condemned that someone is killed in the act of trying to assist someone who turned out was mortally wounded. Deterrence of the defendant, the sentence to be imposed, particularly as to Officer Tokuoka, probably will have little effect on deterring defendant just because of the severity of the sentence for Officer Wallace. But I do accept the arguments that Mr. Brower made about the effect of deterring others. If someone is contemplating or thinking of taking on a police officer or a fireman or someone, a first responder type of person, and they wish to engage in conduct which can cause the death or intend to cause the death of that individual, they need to know that there's going to be consequences. And I think that needs to be a clear statement. And I think deterrence of others from this type of particular behavior is very important in this case. I had been struggling a little bit with the question of consecutive sentences, and I asked Mr. Brower about that. But I think that my difficulty was I was focusing solely upon, or almost exclusively upon, the issue of isolation. We commonly think of isolation as being the most, if you satisfy isolation, everything else just kind of falls into place in the punitive aspect, or at least that's a tendency. But I don't think so. I think that a deterrent message needs to be set, and it needs to be set for a sentence of both officers. I think it would be a mistake for this court to say that once you've killed an officer, you can blow away a few more and your sentence won't be severe as to those second officers. We want people to surrender when they make a mistake. We want people to stop and think. We want them not to engage in conduct, even if they've already messed up, even if they've already committed one offense. And lessening the scale as you go down with more and more crime is not going to serve that purpose. And so I think that deterrence of others really is a serious consideration that the court needs to take notice of when fashioning the sentence for Officer Tokuoka, for the murder of Officer Tokuoka, even though he is not in that mandatory class as is Officer Wallace. Have to think about how the sentence will restore the victims and the community. There's nothing that the court can do that will
bring back any of these, either of these two young men. Your family is going to be without a husband and a father forever. Ms. Green, you're not going to have the opportunity to have more pictures with your son. And for that, I am truly sorry. The loss that you have expressed, Ms. Tokuoka, and the anger and the sadness and all those things that I've seen in the courtroom are understandable. And the fear that you have for raising your children without your husband's assistance are, as Mr. Hedlund said, they're palpable. I can feel them in court. Ms. Green, I don't think that I've ever seen a braver witness. You sat up here and you answered all the questions, and you did so, I thought, as objectively and credibly as any witness could. And they were some of the most difficult questions that a witness would ever have to answer. For either of you, there's nothing that I can provide other than closure in the case. With regard to the community of Huna, I think the community of Huna is entitled to reassurance that when these types of things happen, somebody takes note and somebody steps up and says, this is not right. This whole community was just impacted tremendously by these events. They lost, as the chief said, two-thirds of the police force. They had a man under siege for 2 days. They had officers flying in from all over southeast and Alaska. Their town became almost a military camp with all of these things happening. Many of the people in the town witnessed the injuries which these officers had suffered because, as is happily the case in much of Alaska, when these devastating events occurred, the town came together. We had people volunteering, we had Mr. Scaff said with his pickup. I mean, you know, the injured people were being driven around in pickups just to get things done. All the medical EMTs who lived in town came to the clinic and were rendering aid, not only to help these individuals, but to coordinate their transportation, to assist the police to keep things safe while this was going on, and to give some comfort to the family members who were there as well. This is a scar on the emotional heritage of this community. These are towns where people help each other. There's a certain amount of self-sufficiency that's required. And when you can't trust your neighbors, that culture is diminished. There's also an institutional community, and that's the law enforcement community, I think. We had people from all over the country coming to the services. We had people from all over the state coming and helping out while the siege was going on. And I remember Chief Millen's testimony saying he'd been a police officer, I think it was 20 years is what he said. And he'd seen horrible things, and it's in his letter too, but this was an event that had such an impact on him that he ended up putting law enforcement. He's retired. And even when he was testifying about it, he began tearing up and crying. And this is a tough guy. But apart from Chief Millen individually, the police community is a core institution in our society. And these young men and women put their lives on the line every day. And they need to know that when people go after them, that society is going to stand up for them. And so, maybe in a secondary sense, but in a real sense, officers need to know that they will be supported by the courts in handing out sentences that come down. And I just would note that we've had a number of officers come by throughout these proceedings. There are some here today. I have to consider the defendant's rehabilitation potential and how the sentence will promote that. There is no doubt that Mr. Marvin has issues. We addressed those pre-trial. There was a time when Mr. Marvin was determined not to be able to go forward. He was he received a respite from litigation and was able, the court found, to be restored to competency. Mr. Marvin is 47, 48 years old. He's had a string of problems. He's done some good things in his life. He served in the military. He's helped folks out in Hoonah from time to time. I don't doubt that in at times in his life he's done good things. But I must say that I think that the sentence can most effectively promote his rehabilitation if recommendation is made for his receipt of behavioral health services while he is incarcerated. And I think that those need to be provided in a structured and secure environment. I'm not sentencing Mr. Marvin to prison to get those services. Rather, I will be sentencing to prison because the other factors, I think, are predominant in this case. But rather, I'm going to recommend that he gets those services while he's there. I think that making the sentence for Officer Tokuoka concurrent with the sentence for Officer Wallace diminishes the sentencing criteria that I believe are most critical in this case: the need to isolate the defendant, the need to deter others, and the need to condemn the defendant's action and reaffirm societal norms. I also think, to a lesser degree, that restoration of the community also works against concurrent sentences. Mr. Marvin, it's going to be the sentence of the court that for the murder of Officer Anthony Wallace that you be sentenced to a mandatory term of 99 years in jail. By statute, you will not be eligible for discretionary parole or good time deduction, mandatory parole. For the sentence of Officer, for the murder of Officer Matthew Tokuoka, I am going to sentence you to the maximum penalty in that case of 99 years in jail, and I'm not going to make any of it. I'm not going to make any of it concurrent. I think it should all be consecutive. I think that you're a dangerous individual. There are certainly some issues that you can work on, but in light of the deliberate and premeditated nature of this conduct, despite the opportunity as to Matthew Tokuoka to withdraw from that behavior, I think that serving those sentencing factors can only be achieved by two consecutive 99 years. I'm not going to restrict parole for the reasons I mentioned earlier on the sentence for the death of Mr. Tokuoka. Have any questions, Mr. Hedlund?
No.
Mr. Brower, any questions?
No, Your Honor. I was going to ask that all the firearms, reloading equipment, ammunition, and other things related that were seized pursuant to the search warrants from Mr. Marvin's house before.
Mr. Hedlund?
You mean that other than the two rifles that were the Browning and the other one that were tested?
Everything, yeah.
Mr. Hedlund,
maybe I should file a motion.
If you wish to file a request for non-involved items to be not forfeited and provided to the family, I'll entertain that.
We just do this outside of court.
No, I'll do this. I'll file a motion.
All right. 10 days, Mr. Okay. Burr.
That's what they discussed.
Can I ask for like 30?
Because we didn't have the physical evidence.
That's fine.
30 days to file a motion for forfeiture.
What was discussed, if it didn't have the physical evidence in time, it's supposed to couldn't answer.
Anything else, Mr. Smith?
No, you're not.
I'm guilty of all.
Stand in recess.
Do you understand?
I do.
I do, John.
That's why I said this is the legitimate.
John.